Welcome to a special three-part series of AFP Conversations, The Road to Treasury Optimization, where we take a deep dive into how the treasury landscape is transforming in the Asia-Pacific region, what you should consider when you're looking to enhance liquidity management, how has the pandemic accelerated finance and treasury transformation, and what does the future of digital treasury look like? We answer these questions and more. The series is a companion to the Executive Guide, A Treasurer's Guide to Centralization. If you want to learn more about the topics covered in this series, visit afponline.org/treasurycentralization. That's afponline.org/treasurycentralization.
Hello, I'm Tom Hunt, AFP's Director of Treasury Services and Payments. In this episode, I sit down with Linkit Phoon, Head of Cash and Banking, Asia Pacific at BP Singapore, and Ankur Kanwar, Global Head of Structured Solutions Development and Head of Cash, Asian at Standard Chartered Bank. In our conversation, Phoon and Ankur discuss improvements to working capital and share tips for fellow treasurers looking to enhance liquidity management. Before we start, I want to thank Standard Chartered as the official underwriter of the Executive Guide, A Treasurer's Guide to Centralization, along with this podcast series. Now let's dive into the conversation. Phoon, please tell me about BP's treasury function in the AP region. What is your role exactly?
Right. Well, we have two core teams for BP Treasury in Asia Pacific, mainly the treasury liquidity, where we are responsible for cash management and transactional banking in the region. The other core treasury team in Asia Pacific is called commercial funding, where the team are basically responsible for financing solution and funding activities for BP businesses. Now, I'm heading the transactional banking team in Asia. My key role primary is overseeing the cash management and transactional banking activity for BP businesses in Asia Pacific. I'm also responsible leading the major transformation project in Asia. For example, the recent cash and banking transformation. And I'm also responsible for managing BPQ bank relationship, as well as provide advice to our businesses pertaining to cash management and banking related project in the region.
Definitely have no shortage of activities to do over there. we're here today to really talk more or less about enhancing liquidity management. And you alluded a little bit to it in your transformation project that you discussed. Could you tell us a little bit more what your challenge has been, especially around trapped cash?
Right. Now, trapped cash is not a specific key challenge for BP. In fact, it's most of the challenges for the Asia treasurer. From a BP perspective, I'll basically say that the trapped cash challenge basically are grouped into three key categories. The first is regulatory challenges. I mean, these are the number one challenges in creating an optimal liquidity management structure. I mean, from my point perspective, regulatory changes is quite evolved in Asia, but one of the key areas I would specifically want to highlight is regulatory changes where they're often leaving some scope for interpretation. Now, for example, in China, where we heard about when you do a intercompany fund transfer, often you heard about you have to do it through an entrustment loan. But sometimes there are regulations which we are not very clear, which enable you to do a direct lending, direct shipping to another company. So I think these are some of the areas that we are unclear when we reach out to our bankers. Some of the banks interpret it, you may be able to do some direct lending. Some probably say that, no, you have to continue use a third-party bank to do an entrustment loan structure. So these are some of the regulatory challenges where often is subject to further interpretation.
Yeah, that's actually a nice transition maybe to throw a question over to Anchor is, what is it about the APAC region that makes collecting cash a challenge?
Yep, thank you, Tom. So look, the discussion on trapped cash in Asia is not really new. Although, like Fung mentioned, there have been some interesting developments in the past couple of years on this topic. There are a few reasons why Asia is deemed quite challenging when it comes to trapped cash. First, very much in line with what Fung was alluding to, is really related to the regulatory guidelines and what's allowed, what's not allowed, as well as the interpretation of these guidelines. So some markets in Asia do not allow direct intercompany lending, which makes moving cash offshore quite challenging. Some don't even allow you to hold non-resident accounts offshore, which again adds to the complexity. Yeah. So that's number one. Second is also related to the foreign exchange controls and guidelines around FX. So many currencies in Asia markets cannot be converted to US dollars without regulatory approvals and without submitting a lot of paperwork, which really means sweeping funds out of the country is not really feasible. Third is related to tax implications. So again, there are quite a few tax guidelines, for example, withholding tax on intercompany payments, for example, stamp duty implications on intercompany agreements, all of which kind of adds to the complexity of pulling together cash into a central location. So if you look at the whole APAC region, I think, and if you bucket the countries, you can clearly divide them into three buckets. So on the one side, we have countries like Singapore, Hong Kong, Japan, Australia, where movement of funds in and out is relatively simple. The guidelines are relatively relaxed. You then have the second bucket of countries, the likes of China, Philippines, even Malaysia now, where movement of cash in and out of country is now being permitted, but with certain restrictions. And then you have the third bucket of countries, the likes of India, Pakistan, where regulations are still not favorable to move funds out very easily. Having said that, there have been some interesting developments past few years where countries are making it easier for corporates to move cash out into pooling structures. So for instance, it started with China a few years back, where as part of the whole RMB internationalization, a number of schemes were launched by the regulators on moving RMB offshore. And now you have even smaller markets in Asia. A good example is Thailand, where FX regulations are being relaxed to allow offshore movement of funds. So in Thailand, effective this year, corporates are able to convert their Thai baht collections to US dollars and move funds out without absolutely any paperwork, as long as it's for one of the approved reasons. So Tom, that's in a nutshell on regulatory guidelines, on what's happening in Asia, and how some of the challenges around trapped cash are being eased to some extent.
Yeah, so it's a large region, but it's also a very unique region in that regards. I appreciate you putting those categories together because that helps understand kind of the unique challenges over there. But Fung, tell us a little bit more. What is your vision to capture more cash and provide an enhanced liquidity solution?
Right. My vision is creating a LM structure in the region, basically fall into three key areas. The first is my vision is really to create, enable BP to optimize the cash release of trapped cash. I mean, what I'm looking at is based on the current benchmark. If I could put up a structure that enable me to extract more cash out from the region, I mean, that's a good achievement. Now, the second vision is about if I could recycle those surplus cash that I generated in Asia to support my growth, my business growth. Now, for example, like how do I use those surplus cash that generated in the region to fund our business in a more just in time, to fund our business where I can deploy those countries that I have surplus cash in a region, I can redeploy it back to the business in other countries where they are required of cash. And those really additional surplus cash that I don't need to use in the region, then I'll pull it back to our global liquidity or our pool. Now, the third option, bucket is maximize automation on our liquidity engine. So what we reach is to have a liquidity engine which are fully automated, and it doesn't require manual resources to operate that liquidity engine. Now,
yes. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. From my perspective, I think a combination to achieve that, a combination of regional multi-currency notional pooling and interest optimization structure could be a solution for BP in resolving the liquidity management challenges in the region.
Yeah, so let's dive into that a little bit more. So the multi-currency notional pool structure, when you have it fully implemented, what are some of the enhanced capabilities you expect to have?
Right. Notional pooling structure is not something that previously a preferred model in BP, but I do see that a notional pooling structure, especially when you do it on a regional basis, that actually provide a lot of advantage. So first of all, is you do not physically require to convert your currency and then bring it back to the center, and then you suffer a lot of FX. But to me, what a notional pool structure really to enhance capability is the extended cutoff time. It enables BP to put in place a regional structure in this region, and you capture the benefit of both worlds. I.e., you can sweep with the extended cutoff time, you can sweep your liquidity at a later part of the day, even after the bank, the currency closed, the bank closed, you can further sweep liquidity back to your global pool. But keeping that in the region enable me to fund my business on a more real-time basis.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like you're getting more to a real-time liquidity solution. I want to turn it back to Anchor. How unique is this solution that BP is doing? And do you see other clients asking for this type of functionality?
Sure, Tom. So I think Notional Pool as a standalone solution, I won't say that is very unique. What makes it really unique is when you add all these different elements and you package it like a proper liquidity solution, which is very efficient for our corporates. So things like packaging it together with a cross-border sweep to a central location, things like the number of countries and currencies that are also added in the pool, all of these factors make it quite unique. So in the specific example that Phung is describing, there are certainly a few very unique elements. Okay, number one, as Phung also mentioned, is the cutoff times that we are offering for the notional pool in Singapore. So especially for companies who have global headquarters in the West, we have kind of gotten rid of the concept of cutoff times for the G3 currencies. So our corporates like BP are now able to pull money out of the pool, if it's a US dollar domicile pool, up to 4 a.m. Singapore time, which is aligned with the Fed cutoff time. So that's a very, very unique feature which is added onto the pool. Now, the second unique feature as part of the BP pool also will be the domestic solutions that are being added as part of the overall liquidity solution. So things like domestic interest optimization for some of the trap cash countries, which are also part of the pool, which obviously makes it quite unique. Now, on your other question of other clients, certainly this is quite in demand, but I would say that this is limited to only a small set of population, small set of corporates, generally the ones who are operating with regional or global structures. Because bear in mind, it does take significant amount of time, effort, reviews within the corporate and by the bank to pull together a pooling solution. So it's really not for everyone, and the return versus the effort must make sense. Having said that, I do feel, and I think Fung alluded to this, there are a huge amount of benefits of putting a notional pool together. Okay, so first one is really related to self-funding, which is the primary benefit of a pool. So using excess cash from one entity or one currency to fund short positions for another entity or another currency without any physical conversions. So a notional pool almost simulates what a physical currency swap would do, but without physically executing the transaction. So a notional pool is a lot more efficient in terms of FX management and in terms of overall currency management. That's number one. The second big benefit of a notional pool is just the fact that you are now able to get a consolidated balance position that can be placed out in the currency of your choice. So some corporates would use it to offset their debt. Some would move it to their global pool in the West generally for better investment options. And I think the third biggest benefit that comes with these sort of structures is you are achieving centralization, but at the same time, you are also retaining local autonomy for respective entities, for respective countries. So each subsidiary can continue their usual operating business just as they would without a pool. But at the same time, they will be contributing any of their excess cash to the notional pool in Singapore, which Fung and team obviously can then decide how to use that, either use that for any other purpose here or repatriate back on a daily basis to their global pool.
Yeah, it definitely sounds very involved and definitely has some great capabilities that get built into it. But I want to ask Fung, Anchor, you mentioned about kind of the effort involved has to be worth the return on that effort basically by a company. But Fung, I'm just curious, what talk about what you had to do internally to implement this with your tax team, your legal, the UK group, and maybe even your CFO.
Right. Now, I think, in theory, notional pool definitely have a lot of benefit, but you have to go through a long due process, due diligence process internally to get the structured implement. When I implement the any pooling structure, including notional pool, there are a few key functions that we must engage prior to any implementation. The first is we need to involve our tax department, tax team. I mean, when you're moving funds or when you set up a notional pool structure, I mean, the transfer pricing element on interest rate between the company, that I think is something that you need to get sign off from our tax department. The legal team, to implement a pool structure, there is a lot of terms and conditions that come together with it. We need our legal to sign off the terms and conditions. And from the other key part also that we need to involve is our central treasury team that to align, ensure that they are full alignment with the group central liquidity. I mean, from a BP perspective, we are our liquidity, global liquidity engine are primarily focused on a cash concentration model. So we need to justify how a notional pool, setting up a notional pool in the region will create benefit and how do we operate that structure in the region.
Yeah, so let's look at that a little bit more. So when it's going to be fully implemented, how are you going to measure some of those efficiency gains? And lastly, how important is it to work with a strong banking partner through the process?
Yeah. No, I think to me, how do I measure efficiency is there are a few key elements that I will look at it. The first is the number of trapped cash. I mean, compared to the previous trapped cash in the region, by implementing the new notional pool, how much cash that I able to repatriate back to our center. I expect by implementing the regional pool and various domestic liquidity pooling structure, I'm able to bring in a range of 80% of my current trapped cash back to the center.
That's huge.
Yep.
That's great.
The other efficiency that measure that I'm looking at is the turnaround time to support my business. Now, currently under the existing model, prior to implementing the notional pool structure, how long it take for me to fund my business in a specific currency that they require? For example, in Asia currency, if my business required Aussie dollar, if my business required NZD, what is the turnaround time that I can fund my business? And with the implementation of notional pool, how do I improve that turnaround time? Now, of course, the third measurement is on the yield. Now, traditionally, we have a number of banks currently operate within the regions, and we don't have the interest optimization structure. So prior to BP implement a notional pool, we also have an exercise in the region to rationalize our bank. So we're basically consolidating our bank from a 44 cash management bank that we operate in a region to a single bank model. Now, moving that into the single bank model enable us to put in a structure like interest optimization, where cash that we are unable to repatriate back into the center, we are able to put up a program with a bank, with our banking partner to enhance the yield. Now, a strong banking partner is very important to deliver, to ensure that our vision on enhancing liquidity management. We need a banking partner at the back to support, because notional pool is a structure that, from my perspective, is it required a trusted banking partner, both from how they put in place structure, what are the liquidity engine solution that the bank are able to put up to support BP. For example, how much the bank have invested in technology in enable BP to automate our liquidity engine in the region. I mean, one of the key areas is I do not want to put up many manual resources into operate the model. So the degree of automation is very important. Now, the second point is a strong partner is important is from the regulatory aspect. So implement a regional pooling model, a notional model, involve a lot of support from our bank to understand various local regulation. And we know that we discussed earlier, Asia, the regulation ever evolve. And this is something that we need a banking partner to continue work with BP. So how to adjust our model in order for us to continue operate efficiently and in comply with the various local regulation.
Yeah, it's important to have a good partner to wade through all the changing regulations for sure.
Yes.
But Ankur, I want to ask you, how often should corporates revisit or review their internal structures for effectiveness, such as other cash pooling, notional pooling, physical cash movements, et cetera? How often do you recommend a company look at that?
Yeah, so Tom, generally we see that corporates look to revisit their structures based on certain events. Okay, so for instance, if they're running an RFP, which most corporates would run once in 5 years or so, or if they've done an acquisition or divestment, or if they're looking to start a new stream of business. This was a little bit in the past. What we have seen is during COVID, many companies were looking for cash and they wanted to try and squeeze every possible resources from their dollars, which means there were a lot of active discussions the last 3 years on better liquidity management options and how liquidity structures can make their cash more efficient. So I do feel that liquidity management is no longer once in a five-year sort of an event, and treasurers should look at every possible opportunity to make their structures more efficient. and obviously learning from other corporates as well. Related to that, there are also a lot of new liquidity management tools that are being developed and that are being launched, which also makes it very important for corporates to constantly review their structures. So for instance, things like just-in-time funding, things like cross-currency sweeps, or even new technology solutions like APIs, where corporates can get real-time credit information into their TMS. They can try and simulate what their end-of-day positions will be and obviously make smart investment decisions on the back of it. So it doesn't have to be a full-fledged liquidity management structure. I think corporates can try and achieve better efficiency even by deploying parts of the solution. So I think it's a constant. It doesn't have to be a once-in-a-five-year affair anymore.
Yeah, I think I fully agree with Anko. I think it's not a five-year solution, but it's a ever-changing solution, new solution come up, new regulation come up. We have to continue review our liquidity management solution and finding opportunity to how do we further enhance liquidity solution. From BP perspective, we do explore API. We see a lot of space in API where traditionally we are primarily using Swift as a main channel of communication. I think these are the technology really for further enhance, like perhaps a combination of Swift and API could offer a better solution in solving your liquidity problem in the region.
Yeah, so it sounds like you're definitely looking at using APIs to make the connectivity possible. Was that a hurdle internally at all to get past?
Yes, it is. I think the question here is we need to build a business case on the value. I mean, primarily currently BP are using Swift connectivity. Our banking transformation are primary focus on how do we communicate using our own Swift big code. So API is something that when we start to look at API, it's not something that we want to have a big bang that API are going to replace Swift connectivities as a new form of solution. But we start to look at API more on a smaller scale basis, like balance reporting. Can we leverage on API to better enhance our real-time bank balance reporting? Where are the specific areas that we could leverage API to enhance our solution to our businesses? So this is how we are starting to think of how do we use API. But I think over time, you will see that having multiple solution is a way forward. Multiple ways leveraging on technologies is a way forward for you to enhance your liquidity
solution. Along with automation, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Well, this pretty much concludes the written aspects. I had one extra question in there. I don't know, Anker, did you want to maybe leave some parting comments? We can kind of leave for the end, just for the audience.
Yeah, Tom. So I think the only thing I would say is liquidity management by itself can be quite a complex discussion when it comes to the Asia markets, given all the different nuances we spoke about. Having said that, this is tremendously, tremendously value-adding for corporates. I think you heard some of the stats from Fung on what kind of benefit they're looking for. And if you look at all of the new tech that's coming in, that is being leveraged for liquidity structures, I think it's a very, very exciting times, very exciting time for corporates to kind of reevaluate the way they have been doing their cash management and how else can they look at doing more from their liquidity. So I think that's the only thing I would add, that do look at your structures. There will definitely be ways of kind of making your LM structure more efficient. And that's where banks like us can come and help out as well.
Boong and Anker, I want to thank both of you for today's podcast.
Standard Chartered is the leading international banking group with a presence in 59 of the world's most dynamic markets and serves clients in 83 additional markets. Through its advisory, expertise, and solutions, Standard Chartered helps clients adapt for the future without compromising on today's transactions.